Since 1981, Unbound has connected people like you with families worldwide on their self-directed paths out of poverty. A brighter future is possible for these families when we all walk together. Sponsor a child today, and you'll help a family take the first steps on their path. Change their future in just one click. Start walking with your new friend today at unbound.org/walk.
Welcome to our podcast, The Screwtape Letters, Confronting Evil in Our Time. I'm Ian Faith.
And I'm Galen Belinsky. In each episode, we will unpack one of C.S. Lewis's 31 letters and illuminate the nefarious schemes that the devil and his minions play in our world today.
Understanding how the demonic forces seek to separate us from God helps us to expose them,
reject them, and pursue Jesus as the center of our lives.
Subscribe and join us and our guests on this journey, The Screwtape Letters.
My dear Wormwood, yes, courtship is the time for sowing those seeds which will grow up 10 years later into domestic hatred. The enchantment of unsatisfied desire produces results which the humans can be made to mistake for the results of charity. Avail yourself of the ambiguity in the word love. Let them think they have solved by love problems they have in fact only waived or postponed under the influence of the enchantment. While it lasts, you have your chance to foment the problems in secret and render them chronic. The grand problem is that of unselfishness. Note once again the admirable work of our philological arm in substituting the negative unselfishness for the enemy's positive charity. Thanks to this, you can, from the very outset, teach a man to surrender benefits, not that others may be happy in having them, but that he may be unselfish in foregoing them. That is a great point gained. Another great help, where the parties concerned are male and female, is the divergence of view about unselfishness, which we have built up between the sexes. A woman means by unselfishness chiefly taking trouble for others. A man means not giving trouble to others. As a result, a woman who is quite far gone in the enemy's service will make a nuisance of herself on a larger scale than any man except those whom our father has dominated completely. And conversely, a man will live long in the enemy's camp before he undertakes as much spontaneous work to please others as a quite ordinary woman may do every day. Thus, while the woman thinks of doing good offices and the man of respecting other people's rights, each sex, without any obvious unreason, can and does regard the other as radically selfish. On top of these confusions, you can now introduce a few more. The erotic enchantment produces a mutual complacence in which each is really pleased to give in to the wishes of the other. They also know that the enemy demands of them a degree of charity which, if attained, would result in similar actions. You must make them establish as a law for their whole married life that degree of mutual self-sacrifice which is at present sprouting naturally out of the enchantment, but which, when the enchantment dies away, they will not have charity enough to enable them to perform. They will not see the trap, since they are under the double blindness of mistaking sexual excitement for charity and of thinking that the excitement will last. When once a sort of official, legal, or nominal unselfishness has been established as a rule for the keeping of which their emotional resources have died away and their spiritual resources have not yet grown, the most delightful results follow. In discussing any joint action, it becomes obligatory that A should argue in favor of B's supposed wishes and against his own, while B does the opposite. It is often impossible to find out either party's real wishes. With luck, they end by doing something that neither wants, while each feels a glow of self-righteousness and harbors a secret claim to preferential treatment for the unselfishness shown, and a secret grudge against the other for the ease with which the sacrifice has been accepted. Later on, you can venture on what may be called the generous conflict illusion. This game is best played with more than two players, in a family with grown-up children, for example. Something quite trivial, like having tea in the garden, is proposed. One member takes care to make it quite clear, though not in so many words, that he would rather not, but is, of course, prepared to do so out of unselfishness. The others instantly withdraw their proposal, ostensibly through their unselfishness, but really because they don't want to be used as a sort of lay figure on which the first speaker practices petty altruisms. But he's not going to be done out of his debauch of unselfishness either. He insists on doing what the others want. They insist on doing what he wants. Passions are roused. Soon someone is saying, "Very well, then, I won't have tea at all." And a real quarrel ensues with bitter resentment on both sides. You see how it's done. If each side had been frankly contending for its own real wish, they would all have kept within the bounds of reason and courtesy. But just because the contention is reversed and each side is fighting the other side's battle, all the bitterness which really flows from thwarted self-righteousness and obstinacy and from the accumulated grudges of the last 10 years is concealed from them by the nominal or official unselfishness of what they are doing, or at least held to be excused by it. Each side is indeed quite alive to the cheap quality of the adversary's unselfishness and of the false position into which he is trying to force them, but each manages to feel blameless and ill-used itself, with no more dishonesty than comes natural to a human. A sensible human once said, "If people knew how much ill-feeling unselfishness occasions, it would not be so often recommended from the pulpit." And again, "She's the sort of woman who lives for others. You can always tell the others by their hunted expression." All this can be begun even in the period of courtship. A little real selfishness on your patient's part is often of less value in the long run for securing his soul than the first beginnings of that elaborate and self-conscious unselfishness which may one day blossom into the sort of thing I've described. Some degree of mutual falseness, some surprise that the girl does not always notice just how unselfish he is being, can be smuggled in already. Cherish these things, and above all, don't let the young fools notice them. If they notice them, they will be on the road to discovering that love is not enough, that charity is needed and not yet achieved, and that no external law can supply its place. Oh, and I wish Slum Trimpet would do something about undermining that young woman's sense of the ridiculous. Your affectionate uncle, Screwtape.
All right, well, here we go. Screwtape Letters Podcast, Confronting Evil in Our Time. Welcome back, everyone. Ian and I here into letter 26. And Screwtape kind of opens up the concept of sowing seeds early in the dating relationship that are hopefully for the demonic going to wreak havoc in what will become probably a marriage and a life together for years and years to come.
Galen, it struck me when I went through this, and I think I listened to this, you know, 5 times this morning. We've touched before on, you know, not having a relationship of premarital sex, but they don't actually mention the sexual connection within here, but they do actually talk about the courtship and that moment where you're getting to know someone better. And then later on, obviously, they talk about the relationship within friend groups as well, within bigger friend groups. But I never thought of it along the lines of, in those moments when you're getting to know someone, they're the times when you actually do set the tone for that future relationship. And it's probably even stronger if that tone is set with someone who you court and then marry. Because you now have a legacy. Now you add in there that premarital sex situation and then all the dynamic that comes with that on top of this. Now you got a real big problem to solve.
Yeah, but I think it's very interesting that the demonic knows how it, you know, when you're in a relationship with someone early on, you kind of set a precedent for how you deal with things, how you communicate, how you do conflict resolution, or really in this case, how you don't do conflict resolution. And it sets the habits on what your relationship is going to look like starting at the courtship level, because you're going to take a lot of those habits into marriage. And the overall arching point is that you can actually get them to start building a lot of really unhealthy habits, or to the demonic really good habits, that they're not going to notice until well into marriage, because they're caught up in the infatuation of the relationship.
Right.
So I think it's even a good reminder right on the outset to say, be very intentional about really the core, fundamental, more deeply rooted things in a relationship, especially to those in our audience who are young, dating, courting, engaged, you know, newly, nearly married type of demographic. Start establishing those things now, because it's very easy to overlook them when you're in the excitement of a new relationship. And, you know, I hope people are excited being in love in a relationship when they're in that season,
yeah.
You know, but do it building some good habits that are going to take you for the long haul.
So this whole episode, letter 26, is talking about human relationships. And just to set the tone for people who've already listened to this or read it, it deals with three things that happen within relationships, and both within courtship relationships and with male on male or female on female relationships, where you're getting to know someone as a friend, which is how you interact falls into a couple of different categories when it comes to making decisions and actually choosing to do things, which is selfishly, unselfishly, and charitably. Now, what's interesting about this is, if you ask anyone today, you know, what does charity mean? They'd say, oh, it's giving money to the poor. I think the way C.S. Lewis is talking about it in here, and when you look back on the genesis of the word charity, it's not about money. It's about giving for its own sake, without strings attached, without...
Right.
You know, you wanted to be a martyr about it, or wanted to be put up on a pedestal, but you're just, and it isn't just giving of money. It's giving of your time. If your neighbor said to you, hey, can you come and help me move some? I've got some really heavy stuff. Can you come and help? You wouldn't move it and then walk around the street with a t-shirt on saying, I lifted all the boxes, you know, because you're just giving for its own sake.
And really that's what it is, because the word charity here, the way it was used in the old English context, really is a synonym for love. And the proper idea of love is, I'm going to pursue somebody else's good and desires and value that as if it were my own. So it's not, and this is where Satan has a really crucial play. He takes an aspect of charity, which is, I'm going to lay down my desires, and he's going to just silo that one aspect of it. But true love is not just about, I'm going to give up my desires. It's going to, I'm actually going to integrate your desires into my desires. That's what a good human marriage love relationship is about. I value the desires of my wife as much as I value my own. And I get joy from her getting her desires, not just from me sacrificing my desires. And Satan is doing a little bit of a twisting of this idea, taking one aspect of it, turning something really far up, turning something else really far down, and turning love into a zero-sum game in a dirty way.
Yeah, and I think people conflate the idea of unselfishness with charity, where unselfishness is about, you know, prioritizing the needs or wants of someone else over yours. And in a way, when you actually think about a relationship you have, and think back, I think to our listeners, think back on any relationship you've had with friends or a courtship relationship, or even with your wife or husband, and think about the times when you actually resented doing something, but you did it because you wanted to feel, you didn't want to feel selfish. So you leaned into it as that, I don't really want to go, but, and actually you're not bringing joy into the situation. You're actually, you know, deprioritizing yourself, which is fine, but you're not doing it in a loving way. You're not doing it in a charitable way. You're doing it in a lot of ways. And I think we all know these people, and we call them modern day martyrs, where they're like, okay, I'll come. And it's like, no, we don't want you to now, because it's just, and he talks about this later with those multiple relationships. We want you to come because you want to be part of of what we're doing. We want you to engage because we want you to be part of what we're doing. We don't want to drag you along. And we don't want you to feel like you're doing it just to make us happy.
Hmm.
You know, so there's that side of this, and he delves right into that. He talks about the enchantment of unsatisfied desires produces results that the humans mistake for the results of charity. And I think that talks to that whole idea of unselfishness, where when you have a decision to make on something, do it joyously. And this is where some people say, well, you know, reach outside of yourself or stretch your horizons, or this have an open mind, which, you know, it is not exactly the way to think about it, where the idea of an open mind is anything, but this isn't anything. This is the whole idea of maybe God is putting things in front of you that are new experiences, new people, new journeys, new adventures that you haven't actually thought about doing until then.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. So how would you define, let's come up with a quick definition of unselfishness and a definition of charity. Can we do that? We didn't come prepared, but let's do this. See if we can do that on the fly to kind of see how these two concepts are kind of.
So I look at it like this. For me, unselfishness is prioritizing needs or wants of others over yours. So it'd be like saying, well, I want to watch this movie, you want to watch, okay, I'll watch that. So you do it in a way where you're not happy with the decision, but you're also then saying to yourself, well, I've now actually given myself a deposit into this relationship bank account where I've sacrificed.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I think, where he's talking about how these things fester over the years.
Exactly, exactly. Because now what you're doing is you're tracking all the negatives. I gave up this. I gave up that. I gave up this. I gave up that. And it's literally, it takes a beautiful relationship, but reframes it, turns everything from a positive into a negative. And it's also interesting, unselfishness, when you really think about it, is also a little bit lazy. It's a little bit of a cop-out of love.
Yeah, it is cop-out, totally. Yeah.
Because it's not actually pursuing the good for somebody else. It's not trying to bring about joy in your spouse and finding your joy in them being fulfilled. That would take a little bit of work. Unselfishness just says, well, I'll just sacrifice whatever I want to allow your thing to exist and flourish. It's almost half of the equation in a sense. Whereas charity is kind of integrating my will and your will. So it's like when I'm married, it becomes a two-way street. The joys that my wife has, the pursuits and desires my wife has, are now also my desires. So I'm not just sacrificing what I want to do. I'm taking on what she wants to do as well, and worked together pursuing each other's desires. And when you have just the unself, I'm just sacrificing what I want. I'm just sacrificing what I want. What you're also doing is removing your spouse's ability to have charity, because now their opportunity to love you back can happen when they know what it is you want. And if you're both parties are pursuing unselfishness, sacrificing their own desires in life, you can't, neither can pursue the other for the other. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Oh, and I also think you're taking away joy and the type of elation you get from doing something that you love from the other, because they sense that you're playing this role of, I've given this up for you. Where charity is a virtue, where, and this is how I would challenge people with this, is the next time your spouse or one of your good friends says, and let's do even a minor little thing. Hey, I've always wanted to go and see that new, you know, pick the movie name.
Sure.
Instead of being like, okay, I'll come along. Now you've deflated their excitement.
Right.
You've made yourself being dragged along. Rather than that, pause for a second and say to yourself, honey, I'd love to go with you to that movie.
Right.
Now you've just elevated everything.
Totally.
And that's the essence of what C.S. Lewis is saying in here, which is we've really conflated this idea of charity and unselfishness, where people think that they both hold the same value in God's eyes, and they all hold the same value in building relationships and building you as a virtuous person, where I don't think there's anything virtuous about unselfishness in that, in the way we're talking about it, but there right. absolutely is with charity, because, and it's funny, isn't it, how the demonic work, Galen, because think about it. This just hit me. People would go, I'm not a charity case. So they've actually twisted something that's beautiful, right? Which is giving for its own sake, which is charity, and made people feel like, you know, I don't want pity. It's not I'm giving you pity. I'm actually stepping up as someone who loves you to actually embrace
selfishness. Right. And unselfishness shuts down the other person's ability to express love to you.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's totally. Very interesting how he goes in here as well, where he talks about these, every time this happens, it's fomenting the problem under the guise of love. And you mentioned charity and love and the connection there. But it is conflating those, because I think everyone who's in a relationship has had a moment when it's came out of my mouth, I guarantee it. Back then, I did this for you.
Right.
I think I've even heard in response, what, you didn't want to go there? And it's sure. like, oh, yikes. But it's not good. But without that self-realization and being able to see that clearly, that becomes the default emotional answer, rather than leaning back on Jesus and saying to yourself, not what would Jesus do, but where is the guidance within this? So we don't keep chipping away at our relationship, especially early on. And then these things ferment over time and they just are constantly with you. There's never forgiveness for them. They're stored up as returned fire at mm-hmm. some point in the future relationship.
Totally. Totally. I think it's also really interesting too, you know, just to make it really super practical, pursuing unselfishness is just saying, I'm going to just, you know, it's not even selflessness. It's literally, I find that interesting too. He doesn't say selflessness. He says unselfishness.
Yes.
Yep. Interesting way of phrasing, you know, a pseudo virtue. But by doing that, again, you're not engaging in a relationship. And most of this is in the context of like a dating couple, engaged couple, eventually a married couple. In life and marriage, you need to be constantly in communication. You have to be realistic about your desires. You can sacrifice yourself for a little while, but you're not in marriage to get by for the first 5 years. You're in it for the long haul. And some point, if you're just, you know, unselfish for forever, eventually you're going to feel like you're not being poured into. So what you really have to do in a relationship is labor to communicate with each other about what your needs are in life. What are my desires? What are my goals? What are the passions of my heart? So that you can find those times, because there is an element of sacrifice in love. Sometimes you do have to sacrifice what you want to do, but when it's based on love and not just this sense of, I'm going to not be the selfish person, you're able to sacrifice something that you want to do so that you can bring about the joy in another person. And then eventually they're going to do the same thing for you back. Right. So there's a big element of just practical communication that has to happen in a good, healthy relationship to address conflict, to plan out and architect life, that doesn't happen under this paradigm that the demonic has kind of philologically engineered.
So you mentioned earlier about why he didn't use selflessness and uses unselfishness, right? And I think C.S. Lewis is brilliant with his use of the language. As a sidebar here, I've been studying the book of Genesis with a course that Hillsdale College produce. And gotcha. In Genesis early on, obviously Adam wants Eve's made from his rib, says, I am Ish, and she is Isha, right? So selfish is a man's concern with himself. Right, which is because the genesis of all words are no mistake. They're put together a lot of them from old words and old meanings that date back into more ancient languages. And I was reading back, and actually the word unselfishness and selfish first appear in literature in the 1600s.
Okay.
Right? Not before that. But the individual words like ish is still used in Hebrew. Self was used before. And so you think about the combination of those words, selfish, a man's concern with himself. And then you can understand the idea of the unselfishness is you have no concern for yourself, or you're abdicating that concern rather than being part of the event or part of the whatever's happening, whether it's decisions within the house or things to do, going to visit relatives, engaging, going out to dinner. It's any of those where all of a sudden, C.S. Lewis talks about in here where Screwtape actually says that, you know, if they're selfish, that's not a good thing for us long term, because I think he understands that idea that if you have concern for yourself, you're probably going to be more charitable. And I've always thought there's a certain amount of selfishness that you should actually have as a person, because it's good for you, good for your own family. And in the same way, you know, we've had a preacher before that says, when certain people want to come to your house, the answer's no. That's right. Being selfish, right? It's the concern for you and your concern.
But you have to take care of that. I mean, you have a responsibility. It's to put on your own oxygen mask first. If you're not able to take care of yourself and your own household, you're not able to pour out into other people. Ministry in general and service and love towards others, it's pouring out. Paul talks in scripture how I'm a drink offering poured out for the gospel. But you can only pour out what you have in your cup. And so you have to manage it carefully. You really do have to make sure you are taking care of yourself. Scripture also says, love your neighbor as yourself. There is some understanding that you have a love and appreciation and regard for the life that God gave you, and you're going to steward it well. And love for others is predicated on love for yourself. And I think that's exactly what Satan is trying to unroot and uproot in here. Your spouse cannot love you if you don't have a desire that you're willing to express. Your spouse cannot love you if you don't have something that it is you want and you need, and you're willing to communicate, express that, and receive love in that way, and vice versa. And it's because love is a two-way street.
Absolutely.
So we're constantly just putting ourselves behind. We're hiding behind a pseudo virtue and,
Oh, that's a great way to put unselfishness. It is a pseudo virtue.
The pseudo virtue, exactly.
Yeah, absolutely, because C.S. Lewis encapsulates that with the glow of self-righteousness and a feeling of being owed something for capitulating ultimately becomes a grudge. And it does.
Mm-hmm. You know, in the long run, yes.
It happens in, as I say, friendships. It happens in courtship, and all the time you've got to be looking out for them, because again, you don't want to marry someone who you've had that early courtship with and you're thinking, I'm going to hold these grudges long term. If you go into marriage with a grudge or grudges, whether they're big or small, they will fester and become something.
Oh yeah. You will not make it through life. They will come to the surface at some point. Something will happen in your life and marriage that becomes a catalyst, a triggering event or something, where that stuff will come to the surface without a doubt.
So he also then goes on to talk about how, and this is interesting, that even in the 30s, C.S. Lewis has a fundamental understanding that men and women are different and about how they take on things. And he says, for a woman to be unselfish, it's taking trouble for others. Where for a man, it's not giving trouble for others. And he talks about a woman very easily can become a busybody who thinks she's doing the right things, but it's just getting involved in everything. And for men, they just disconnect and they stay out of everything and anything. And it's funny, you see it in situations where you'll get Christian men talking about not voting, not being part of the system because, oh, God's got this and I don't need to be part of that. And I'm just going to step away and just Christ is king and he'll follow on. Christ will always be king. That's a non sequitur. You're here to be a part of a situation. Now step up as a man and be selfish. Understand what's best for you and your family.
Well, stand up and walk in authority. And this is where the demonic is always going to throw counterattacks. And you need to recognize the signal from the noise. Walking in your authority and pursuing a good that God has given you for you and your family is not pursuing selfishness. It's walking in authority. And I think it's very interesting the way he phrases this also. He talks about the genders do tend to, men will err on this side, women will err on that side. And I think it's really interesting and important to point out that men will pursue their unselfishness typically by just trying to not give their trouble to others. It's a passive pursuit.
Right.
And the demonic is always trying to get a man to err on the side of the passive life. Even in the way that he pursues love in the relationship, how do you do it, man? Do it passively. And I think it's so important. It's exactly the sin that Adam had in the garden. You're studying Genesis. Boom. He was right there. Well, yep. What did I do? Nothing. Well, I didn't do anything, God. That was the problem. Right. This woman that you gave me did it.
Yeah, right. There you go. Yeah.
The sin of man is always going to cause him to err on the side of being passive. And almost always, you can just use that as a rule, always take action over passiveness. You'll be pursuing righteousness about 9 times out of 10.
Hey, is it a bit of a biblical Easter egg when he says, and I think it's something along the lines of a wise man said or someone, if people realized how much ill feeling and selfishness produces, it would never be recommended from the pulpit. Now, is he talking about an historical figure here or is this like a bit of a biblical Easter egg?
Yeah, that's a good question. I was reading that too, and I was wondering, like, is that a phrase that was used more in the 1930s and 40s, or was there some specific movement going on at the time where people were really focusing on that? I actually don't know that. I was wondering the same thing, and I actually don't know the answer to that. Maybe if anybody's listening and they have more insight on what, you know, what was the context of the pulpit conversations, you know, in England and in America at the time? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question, to be honest.
Yeah, other than it's one that intrigued me because especially when he closed it from the pulpit. So it made me think, was it a Christian leader of the last couple of hundred years who said it? Or like I said, was it a biblical Easter egg? So
yeah,
for our listeners, if you know it, just, you know, reach out. We'd love to know anyway, and then I'll maybe doing some Googling later on to see if I can find it. But my quick first look, I couldn't see who it was. So yeah, this is a great episode, and it. One thing I love about this episode, Galen, is that it really makes what we're doing with unpacking these and decoding them in some ways for people, where you could read this and go, "Oh, what was that?" This one is deep when you dig into it,
because it really is.
It all of these letters have little nuggets in for me that I hope make me a better person.
Mm-hmm.
This one for me as well, with the insult, because I've probably fell back into a little bit of that Ahab spirit in times in my life where, oh, I'll do it. What? Okay, then poor me. I'm gonna capitulate and just go along. It's pathetic. But it's only pathetic when you actually have that mirror to look back at yourself,
to see it. Yeah. Yeah.
And say what it is. And I really am going to do it. And I hope my wife experiences this before she listens to this episode, which is the next time she asks me to do something where I go, I don't really want to go to the movies, I'm actually going to be like, that'd be awesome. Let's do it. I want to see her light up.
I would love to take you to the movies. Yeah.
Yes. And I'm going to do that next time out of old style charity.
Yeah, and because both are true.
And love.
I'll gladly sacrifice what I want to do to take you to the movies. Or you can say, I would love to be able to take you to the movies. It's all a framing, and the demonic always has a way of reframing everything. Our pastor says everything God creates, Satan counterfeits, and these little phrasings can sow seeds that if he can't get you today, he'll find these ways of sowing these relational seeds that might, you know, turn into some sour plants years and years down the road. So some good warnings. So
there really is. So, you know, wrapping up this letter on the generous conflict delusion, as C.S. Lewis puts it, is a very cool term for the whole thing. But yeah, delving into these human relationships, again, being a mirror for all of us to incrementally make ourselves better people, more godly people, more people that you'd hope to be able to stand in front of Jesus and not be ashamed. That is ultimately where you want to get to. So
I want to close it on one word, if I can. This is actually tying into also the heart of the gospel. And that's what I really see. If there's an Easter egg in here, it's this. It's that there is an element of sacrifice and unselfishness that Christ had when he laid down his life, took up his cross, and went to the cross to die for the sins of mankind. But it wasn't just selflessness. Scripture tells us he was selfless and sacrificial, but he did it because he loved us. He did it so that we could be brought to God and brought into relationship with God. And the heart of God for all of eternity has been to redeem people in Christ so that as we are made whole, God receives the glory. So God has an inherent good and receives glory and receives a benefit from looking out for our good, which is saving us in Christ. That really is the heart of the gospel. It's not just that Christ sacrificed himself on the cross, but God was actually even able to glorify himself by bringing people to himself, restoring mankind, saving people, redeeming people, transforming lives and legacies. And that is the heart. That is the love heart, charity heart of God expressed in the gospel. It's not just Jesus' sacrifice, although that was a huge part of it, but it was a sacrifice to pursue our good that also brings God good and glory as well. And that to me is the heart of the gospel that Satan's constantly trying to distort. So there it is. Letter 26. If you have any thoughts or questions or insights, we always love to hear from you. Check out our website, ScrewtapeLettersPodcast.com. Screwtape Letters Podcast, confronting evil in our time. And until next time, we'll see you.